Hello, my name's John Dennis. It's Monday the 8th of June. Today, as the scale of Labour's defeat in the European elections becomes clear, MPs meet to discuss what to do about Gordon Brown. Also today, with summer approaching, parents face a nationwide shortage of childminders.
Because they have that flexibility and when kids aren't at school, and it's tricky. This year there's kind of 4,000 fewer than there were last year.
Channel 4 is to make almost its entire archive free to watch online.
It would be someone a bit naive not to think that it's trying to remind the world of its radical credentials.
And we hear from Billy Bragg, who's on tour in Wales to mark the 25th anniversary of the miners' strike.
We need to reconnect with those ideas that were to the forefront of our politics in the post-war consensus.
But now, with news of the European elections and their impact on Labour, here's Bill Overton.
Gordon Brown faces a make-or-break challenge to his leadership today after Labour trailed humiliatingly behind UKIP in the European elections. It's been a night of unremitting gloom for Labour, with the Tories pulling more than 10 points ahead and UKIP moving into second place. The Guardian's senior political correspondent Andrew Sparrow sums up just how bad the results are for Labour.
Very, very bad. Labour came third behind UKIP. This seems to be the first time that any of the major parties have come third in a nationwide poll of this kind since the Labour Party became a national party, basically, after the collapse of the Liberals in the 1920s. They knew it was going to be bad, but this is, I think, towards the sort of far end of their worst expectations. But Labour's leadership rules are such that it's specifically designed to make it very hard to get rid of a Prime Minister in these circumstances. But I can assure you there are plenty of people in the party who are determined to do their best to try and make it happen. We'll get a better sense today of whether how they're going to do that and sort of how far they can take it.
All across Europe, centre-left parties have suffered humiliation, with voters in Germany, France, Italy, Spain and Poland voting for the centre-right. The other major development is the British National Party has won two seats in the European Parliament, with party leader Nick Griffin becoming an MEP in the North West. Andrew Sparrow says that'll also weaken the Prime Minister's position.
That's the first time the BNP have got seats in the European Parliament, which is a source of shame for a lot of people in mainstream politics. It's something that Gordon Brown is going to get the blame for, and it's a significant move for them, because not least having a seat in the European Parliament unlocks a huge wad of European money, which they'll be able to pour into their party. So plenty of jobs going for sort of BNP activists in Brussels. That is a sort of big and significant development in British politics on its own.
The Conservatives say the results show Gordon Brown's authority has completely disappeared and that he should call an immediate general election. Other news in brief, 17 bodies have now been recovered from the Atlantic in the area where an Air France plane disappeared last week. The investigation into the crash continues to focus on faulty speed sensors on the aircraft. And the Birmingham-based van maker LDV is expected to be placed in administration after attempts to sell it failed. 850 jobs could go. The papers, well, the headlines say it all. Euro trashed, Judgment Day for Brown, Count Brown and Labour out for the count are just a few of the one-liners dominating the front pages. There's more news and comment throughout the day at guardian.co.uk.
Guardian Daily. News and reports from around the world.
Don't forget, there's full coverage at guardian.co.uk/politics. Parents could face problems finding childcare this summer. There are 10,000 fewer registered childminders than there were 6 years ago. That's according to figures released in Parliament to the Liberal Democrats. At least one in seven childminders, these are people who usually look after small numbers of children in their own homes, have left the job since 2003. And Polly Curtis, our education editor, says the numbers are still in rapid decline.
These are parliamentary figures from the Lib Dems, which showed that there's been a drop of about 10,000 childminders in the last 6 years. So it's gone down to about 60,000 in total. But a lot of that drop has been in the last kind of 12 months. The Lib Dems say this is probably because of new regulations on childminders to provide a basic kind of education, what's known as the NAPI curriculum, the early years foundation stage. And that's been quite hard for some childminders to adjust to. And Lib Dems say they're just leaving the job.
Might there be other factors that have caused a decline in numbers of childminders?
Yeah, and I think it's quite important to say that some of the people I talked to for this article pointed out the fact that parents increasingly want their kids to go to nursery, especially when they're kind of more than 2 years old, so that they have contact with other children, and that some nurseries in some areas are actually booming at the same time. So it could be that there's an element of that, but it still means that in some areas of the country you won't have the choice of a childminder. Childminders are much more flexible than nurseries. Nurseries are often, you have to pick your kids up at a certain time every day, whereas childminders work from home and can be kind of a lot more flexible and easy to work with.
We're just coming up to the summer holidays, of course, and that's a time when parents will be particularly eager to find a childminder.
That's right. Childminders also quite often step in during the holidays because they have that flexibility. And when kids aren't at school, and it's tricky 6 weeks for a lot of parents to find childcare for their kids. So childminders are often a good option then. And this year there's kind of 4,000 fewer than there were last year.
And what's the government saying about it?
The government are defending their early years foundation stage.
That's the NAPI curriculum. Yeah.
That's the NAPI curriculum, yeah. They are saying that that hasn't put people off and that it's improved a lot of childminders. I think that's the main point they're making in the political row with the Lib Dems, which has been quite long running over this.
Polly, many thanks. Polly Curtis, and there's full coverage at guardian.co.uk/education. Also on The Guardian's website today, comedian David Mitchell is interviewed by Decca Aitkenhead at guardian.co.uk/comedy. Kathleen Jamie on Daddy Longlegs is at guardian.co.uk/G2. And Charlie Brooker, our columnist, compiles the ultimate mixtape that would be impossible to have sex to. Have your say on that, as I'm sure you will, at guardian.co.uk/commentisfree. Still to come in today's programme, Billy Bragg.
We need to reconnect with those ideas that were to the forefront of our politics in the post-war consensus.
But first, at the moment, Channel4.com shows content up to 30 days after transmission. But Channel 4's planning to become the first British broadcaster to make all its archived programming, or almost all of it, available on its website completely free of charge. It means that viewers will be able to watch programmes such as Father Ted, Queer as Folk, the period drama The Chamomile Lawn, without having to buy a DVD. Ben Dowell has the details.
One of the things about Channel 4 is it's having a lot of soul-searching about its future, particularly its financial future. Its business model is in some trouble because it doesn't make its own programmes. It's a commissioning broadcaster. BBC makes its own programmes. ITV makes its own programmes under ITV Productions. Channel 4 is exclusively a broadcaster that commissions programmes from independent, so it doesn't actually own its content. So its business model means that it has to be advertiser funded, which in particularly now with the recession and the massive decline in advertising, is its revenues are in some trouble. It's begging for government money. It's begging for either a slice of the licence fee or a possible, and there is talk of a possible merger with BBC Worldwide, which would give it some guaranteed funding. So I think it would be someone a bit naive not to think that it's trying to remind the world of its radical credentials, as well as remind the world of all the lovely great programmes it's made over 25 years. I think that has to be part of its thinking.
Will Channel 4's rival broadcasters, such as the BBC, follow suit?
It's an interesting question, and they'll probably see how it rolls out. I think ITV might have some trouble doing that. It's has quite a portfolio of quite successful digital channels, ITV2, ITV3 and ITV4, which relies heavily on its back catalogue of its own programming, and that gets quite good figures and does reasonably well in funding terms. I think ITV4 makes money, actually. But I think you'll probably see how it works. I'm not entirely sure how it would work for ITV. The BBC, obviously, is a different kettle of fish because it isn't hasn't got a commercial imperative. But it's also looking at other ways of having catch up. It's got quite an interesting few ideas up its sleeve. But whether or not the BBC, I mean, the BBC worldwide also makes quite a lot of money from selling DVDs of its own content, you know, back catalogues of Doctor Who's and things like that. So whether it would give them out for free is a moot point.
Ben, many thanks. Twenty-five years ago, Billy Bragg, the singer-songwriter and political activist, provided the soundtrack to The Miners' Strike, a titanic and often tragic struggle against Margaret Thatcher's government. A quarter of a century later, he's embarked upon a tour of Wales to mark the 25th anniversary of the strike. The Guardian's Stephen Morris went to see Billy perform at the Blaenavon Workmen's Hall.
It's kind of twofold, really. I mean, first of all, I've never done specifically a Welsh tour. Like a lot of English artists, my Welsh tour is Swansea and Cardiff. So I get to go to places I've never played in before, not just in the valleys, but also places like Cardigan, Aberystwyth, Carnarvon. So that's exciting after 25 years of touring. To go to new towns is always exciting. Although we're commemorating the miners' strike, which is the focus of the tour, I don't want it to be a matter of nostalgia. I think that there are issues that we're facing now with regard to the economy and to some extent the constitutional situation, but more importantly, the economy, that we need to reconnect with those ideas that were to the forefront of our politics in the post-war consensus, those ideas of a society in which the collective took responsibility for the individual, those ideas that have been not eradicated in the last 30 years but sort of trampled over by the sort of free market laissez-faire bandwagon and the way that consumerism has replaced the idea of the individual and the collective. So I'd like to on this tour reconnect, and the reason I come to Wales to do that is because I think that in Wales these ideas are still have some powerful meaning to people, if only in the sense that when people in Wales feel betrayed by the Labour Party, they don't vote for a racist fascist party like the BNP. They vote for progressive nationalist party like Plaid, or maybe the Greens also have representation in the Assembly. So clearly there's something different here in Wales, and in Scotland too, to give them their due. But here, particularly in Wales, because of the tradition with the miners and the Labour movement. To join the picket lines, but together we cannot file. We got stopped by police at the county line. Say, go on, boys, or you're going to jail. Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
At the moment, with you're a long time Labour supporter, a very high profile one. What do you make of the current situation?
Real disappointment and. Mostly at the disarray within the cabinet. You know, I don't think what Blears and Purnell did was helpful. I think they have betrayed Labour activists working on the ground. I mean, I've been out with a couple of efforts with the European election in the southwest. We do have a bit of problem with the BNP in Bristol, and I was out with some people on a very wet Saturday afternoon, knocking on doors, asking people to vote Labour. I mean, how awful could it be? I mean, at the very least I could do was go up there and do the sort of thing Woody Guthrie used to do, you know, singing in a little hole to 30 activists. And like so many people out there, Labour activists, non-Labour activists, ordinary citizens, constitutional nut jobs as well. I'm hoping that the current crisis will bring about change that clears away a lot of the negative growth that came with the centralisation around Thatcherism and then with New Labour. and we can have a beginning again, a new politics that proves to people that their participation is important and their vote counts and their voice counts for something.
Billy Bragg with Stephen Morris. Peter Sale and Douglas Hardy produced today's edition of Guardian Daily. My name's John Dennis. Thank you for listening.